Okay, welcome everybody. My name is Hanna Vos and I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Wageningen in the Netherlands. And I would like to present now the work I did together with a master thesis student of mine, Lieke Bezemer. And I look to phosphorus as a key nutrient for plant growth, which availability can be limiting for this growth. And this is because the majority of phosphorus is chemically adsorbed to the metal hydroxides in the soil. Now this can be alleviated by the addition of artificial fertilizers, but the store of those fertilizers is limited, so we're looking to different ways to increase the phosphorus availability as well. And in the Netherlands, soils have a large content of phosphorus due to over-fertilization in the past. But this phosphorus is chemically adsorbed, so to make it available, it has now been discovered that earthworms are able to temporarily and locally increase the availability of phosphorus in their cast, so their excrements. And it has been shown that plants are able to benefit from this increase in phosphorus availability. Now, how the earthworms do this, so what exactly are the pathways, is not completely known, although several pathways have been proposed, and I would like to explain those to you with the help of this schematical figure. On this side, you see a large pool of unavailable inorganic phosphorus in the soil, which should then be desorbed to become available before the plants can take it up. On the other side, we have a large pool of unavailable organic phosphorus, but because the plants take up phosphorus in inorganic form, this should not only be desorbed, but also mineralized to inorganic phosphorus. Now, how do the earthworms affect these processes? A first pathway is that of the pH, which the earthworms can alter in their cast by 1 to 2 pH units, and we know that pH is very important for the phosphorus dynamics. A second pathway is that of elevated DOC concentrations, or dissolved organic carbon. Now, these concentrations can be increased as a consequence of the stimulated microbial activity by the earthworms, but also because of direct excretion of, for instance, mucus. And DOC has a negative charge, so it competes with phosphate, which also has a negative charge, for the binding sites on those metal hydroxides. Now, if the amount of DOC increases, the competition will increase, so more phosphate can remain in the soil solution. A third proposed pathway is that of selective feeding. Earthworms are able to actively choose the food they feed on, so if they ingest material that has a higher phosphorus content, it is possible that their excrements also contain a larger phosphorus content. And a fourth pathway is that of phosphatases, which are the enzymes that catalyze the mineralization process of organic to inorganic phosphorus. And because of the stimulated microbial activity due to the earthworms, more of these phosphatases can be excreted, so more phosphate can be available. However, this fourth pathway I will not discuss in this presentation. For this experiment, my research objectives were twofold. First, to quantify the effect of different earthworm species on the availability of soil phosphorus. And secondly, to determine the chemical properties that are responsible for this increased phosphorus availability. So to link the observed differences between species to those pathways I just explained. And therefore I set up a pot experiment in the greenhouse for which I used a sandy soil with a low phosphorus status. And we used monocultures of 8 earthworm species that are common to the Netherlands, as well as a control soil without earthworms. The earthworm species belong to different functional groups. And there were 2 epigeic species, that are species that live in the topsoil and feed on fresh surface litter. There were 4 endogeic species, which live deeper in the soil and feed on the older soil-associated organic matter. And there were 2 anisic species, which can make vertical burrows, but feed on the fresh surface layer on litter on top. Of all treatments, I had 3 replicates distributed over 3 blocks. And I used 1 crop, only perennial ryegrass. After I had pre-ground the grass, I inserted the earthworms to the pots, and then I collected them to let them excrete their cast in the laboratory, and then I did measurements. And I measured two different pools of phosphorus that differed in their availability to plants. The first pool was that of chemically adsorbed phosphorus, so we measured the concentration of POX, oxalate extractable phosphorus, and we measured the concentration of water extractable orto-P as an indication for the amount of readily available phosphorus. I also measured some chemical properties that are able to affect these phosphorus pools, like for instance the pH and the concentration of DOC, and we measured variables that were related to the type and the quality of the food source of the earthworms. Now I would like to show you the results, and I will present them in these type of graphs. In all graphs you will see on the x-axis the different earthworm species. So here in green are the two epigeic species, gray are the four endogeic species, and the blue ones are the two anisic species, and the white bar is that of the control soil without earthworms. And here on the y-axis you see the isotopic signature of the food the earthworms ingest. Now we can see that the pattern of this graph corresponds very well with the functional groups these earthworms are placed in, because when we see a higher delta C13, it means that the carbon is older, while when the isotopic signature is lower, the carbon is more fresh. So in this case, we see that all the four endogeic species, they have a higher isotopic signature, meaning that they fed on old organic material, which indeed corresponds to the functional group they belong to. And for the two anisic species, and also, where's my mouse? This epigeic species, we see that they have a lower isotopic signature, indicating they feed on fresh organic material. Now we're going to look to the phosphorus dynamics. First to the pool of chemically adsorbed phosphorus. And here we see that the concentration of oxalate extractable phosphorus in the cast of these earthworms is higher than the concentration in the control soil. We also observed that there were no differences among the different earthworm species, which means that although selective feeding on phosphorus-rich constituents takes place, this is the general earthworm capacity for the species I investigated, and there's no difference between those species. The Apodactoria rosea was missing in the statistical analysis because we were not able to collect sufficient cast material to do all the analysis we would like to do. Here we see the results of the amount of readily available phosphorus, and we can see that the concentration in the control soil is barely visible, while it is visible for the earthworms. So also here the concentration of orto-P in the cast of earthworms was higher than concentration in the soil. And in this case we also observed that there was a large variation among the different earthworm species, with much higher concentrations for some species than for others. Now, for the other chemical parameters we measured, we saw that the pH was much higher in the earthworm cast than in the control soil, and this is in agreement with previous studies. We also observed there was significant variation among the different earthworm species. For the concentration of dissolved organic carbon, we see again an increased concentration in the cast of the earthworms compared to the control soil, and we observed a significant variation among the different earthworm species. Now, you might have noticed that the pattern of this last graph resembles that of the one I showed previously on the amount of readily available phosphorus. So what I did here was plotting those two parameters, sodium concentration of orto-P and DOC, together. And we observed a strong positive correlation between the two, which suggests that the competition between orto-P and DOC can be an important pathway for the increased phosphorus availability. And this is in agreement with the previous modeling study that has been conducted in our group. If I now summarize my results, we saw that the amount of readily available phosphorus is increased in earthworm cast compared to the control soil, but there's a large variation among the earthworm species. We also saw that there was a large variation in the cast properties that are related to the phosphorus dynamics. So that for the different earthworm species, the importance of the pathways in the schematical figure can be different. But in general, that the competition between orthoP and DOC may be a very important pathway for this increased phosphorus availability. Now, we saw previously that the results of the isotopic signature corresponded well with the functional groups of the earthworms. But if I now put all the figures of my results together, of phosphorus dynamics, we see that this pattern of the functional groups is not clearly seen in all these graphs, and that the difference within a functional group can be much larger than the differences between functional groups, which leads to the conclusion that the conventional earthworm classifications, so those earthworm functional groups, are not able to explain the observed variation in phosphorus dynamics, and therefore that the composition of the earthworm community, so not only its size but the composition of the community, is key to optimizing the phosphorus availability to plants. I'd like to thank you all for your attention. About the microbes, your question is about if I have some idea about the microbes in the gut of the earthworm. And why their activity might be increased. The activity of the microbes in the earthworm gut can be increased because the conditions inside the earthworm gut are very favorable for those microbes. So the temperature is higher, the pH is more optimal, there are a lot of carbon sources, so the conditions are quite optimal for them, and therefore their activity is stimulated. Does that answer your question, or? Yeah? Yeah, I think it is indeed possible that there are differences between the different earthworm species in the microbial composition. Your question is how the root exudates relate to this story for phosphorus availability. Well, I do not study root exudates, so I don't know very much about it, but I know that roots are able to excrete like those phosphatases, for instance, so they can also stimulate the availability of phosphorus in their surroundings. What I did here was looking to the effect of earthworms, so to see if their castings can be like hotspots for increased phosphorus availability, which then can be used by the plants to be taken up as a nutrient source.
What was the ratio of available to unavailable phosphorus in the soils you were studying? What was the percent of total phosphorus that was available in these soils?
The ratio of, you asked for the ratio between organic and inorganic phosphorus and total available phosphorus in these soils. This research was done on a new soil, so I have to think very hard for the characteristics of that soil. And we used Dutch measurement characteristics. So it's a low phosphorus status. So for the I don't know if the PAL value, ammonium lactate, says anything to you, but that's a Dutch standard we use to measure the phosphorus status in grasslands. And for this soil, it was 24 milligrams P2O5 per kilogram, and everything above 25 is considered sufficient for plant growth. So it was low. The ratio of inorganic to organic phosphorus?
Of unavailable.
Well, in general, the amount of unavailable phosphorus is much larger than the amount of available phosphorus. And over a growing season, it's usually less than between 1 and 10% of the added phosphorus fertilizer can become available to the plants, but the majority of all phosphorus in the soil is chemically adsorbed to those metal hydroxides and is therefore unavailable.
We have to move on.
Yes, we will.
We will have a break later, so
thanks again.